I was a citizen of Palestine before 1948, and Palestine, of this country of Palestine, 22% are the occupied territories in which the Palestinians desire and are ready to set up their own national state of Palestine. The question is, do we agree to live side by side with an independent, sovereign state of Palestine? Yes or no? If not, then every further discussion is superfluous. We shall have war, and again, and again, and again, and again, until the end of time.
Uri Avnery, I want to thank you very much for being with us. I'm sorry we've come to the end of our show. Longtime Israeli peace activist, writer, former member of the Israeli Knesset and founder of the Gush Shalom peace movement, crossed lines in 1982 in the siege of Beirut to meet with Yasser Arafat. This breaking news from BBC, U.S. aircraft launch airstrike against Islamic State of artillery in Iraq. That does it for our broadcast. We have a job opening at Democracy Now! Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, and Makov. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area, coming to you from Henry Ford College. And the main campus is really booming here. We're getting ready, everything fixed up, spruced up. A lot of concrete is being replaced right now in the parking lots and the sidewalks. And everything's going to be ready for the August 28th, beginning of the fall semester here. That's the first day of classes. You do need to register before August 28th. You can't get into a class, if you're not in any class, by August 28th, okay? So register for something. You'd still have a couple days to maybe at what they call add or drop, but very important. New policy from a couple years ago. You need to register and enroll in classes before August 28th, okay, because that's when classes start. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm station advisor here at WHFR, the station making waves. And with me in the studio today, sitting in for our news director, John Conroy, is Terrence Tyson. So welcome to the Journal, Terrence.
Oh, nice to be here, Jay.
Now, if you recognize that voice, folks, Terrence is a DJ here, as most people wear several hats at the station, so to speak. And tell us about your show. Go ahead.
It's jazz music, and it airs every Sunday from 10 a.m. until 1. And so we play a lot of the classic jazz artists, including, you know, new releases, and we kind of go all different kind of directions with it.
Yeah, I love the mix. It's my favorite radio show on, I mean, out of all Detroit radio on Sunday mornings. I'm just getting up and somewhat having a leisurely breakfast on most Sunday mornings. Not this last Sunday. We'll talk about homecoming in a minute. But I love that mix of traditional and classic, and you have great information about the artists. You've been doing that show or a jazz show for us for quite a few years. So
yeah.
You're not a newbie DJ.
Nope.
I don't know if you want to mention how many years. Must have been 10
it's
years.
It's got to be 11, 12 years yeah. now, because I know okay. I took a hiatus for a minute, right. Then came back. Yeah,
that's right. And you even were an officer for a while? No?
I don't believe I have been.
No. Well, it's on the agenda. Don't worry. We've got you earmarked now. Because he knows how things work, folks, and that's always dangerous because we might ask him to volunteer. We don't force anybody to be an officer like a program director around here. Pat Frisco was program director for a while, our other jazz DJ who does the Avant show, as I call it, on Tuesday nights. Although Tuesday he did a great tribute I think you're the third or fourth one we've done here at the station, to Johnny Winter, who passed away, the guitarist. Didn't expect that from Pat.
I heard some of that, yeah.
But must have been part of his formative years when he was growing up, listening to Johnny Winter. So, because jazziness can actually be in several different formats when you think about it. I mean, it depends on your definition. But anyway, so try to catch Terrence Tyson's show on Sunday mornings here on WHFR from 10 to 1. Now we get into the news, the hard news. And I'll start with the sad news. Isn't that the only kind of news there is? No. there's news about things that we can make a difference with, of course. But the big farewell locally is we mourn the passing of Morris Goodman. He was an attorney, local attorney, and a columnist every week or every other week for the Press and Guide. And he did take a leave of absence for a little while towards the beginning of this year, end of last year. He needed an operation because of a medical problem called cancer, okay, the big C. And they thought he was going to make a quick recovery. He was very optimistic. He wrote a column about everybody should be aware of cancer and its issues and trying to give people hope. He did support the Relay for Life for the last couple of years. That's a group fighting for a cure for cancer and trying to help the survivors with their recoveries. And he did go through the operation, didn't work out quite as well as expected. They had to remove, I think it was a pancreas, and he became an instant type 1 diabetic because he didn't have a pancreas. But that apparently was more cancer cells in that area than they thought before they did the operation. He was making a good recovery. His wife even wrote a column that they did publish this week in the Press and Guide when he was still alive, but she just wrote it in the last, like, maybe 2 weeks ago, and it was published this last week in the Press and Guide about the problems and the hopes of living together as husband and wife and just keeping positive and so on in general. And unfortunately it didn't work out. And we're very sorry about that. Morris was a guest on this show, as many local activists and opinion leaders are, and elected officials, of course. And we had a great time with him. It was last year sometime. And he was full of ideas. Of course, he was known, and this is not a negative, but just so you know, he was a lifelong Democrat and liberal, and he was quite articulate in stating that position. For a while, the Press and Guide had him on one of these... They found an articulate conservative, let's say, Republican, to talk about. So each week they would put them both in there for sure. And then something happened. The Republican didn't continue writing, I guess. So they found some other conservative voices to try to balance out their op-ed page in the Press and Guide. But often they let these opinion people. And by the way, Morris got no money from that. Because the papers are such today, the weekly papers, they don't even have one full-time reporter. Okay. Everybody whose name you see regularly is just part-time. So that those part-time people, they need a day job. You know, they need other money. So they don't have the time to do investigative reporting, to do a lot of interviewing. They can't check sources. They don't have time for that. They might want to. They might know the difference. And so I think it's a terrible crisis in our local weekly papers that they don't have full staffs like they had even 10 years ago. They don't have full-time photographers. They don't have full-time reporters covering City Hall, much less the education beat, as they call it, and all the other stories that come up. So they filled the paper with happy news, what was called soft news. I talked about this last week on this show. And... you know, that's okay if that's what you want to read. I want to find out about the issues that matter that we can make a difference with. And so that's usually what I try to cover on this show. So we mourn the passing of Morris Goodman, as well as anyone else who has passed. The next group of people haven't died, but I wanted to mention them too. Today, August the 8th, was the last Craig Folly show. That's Monday through Fridays. It was from 9 to 11 a.m. It used to be 10 to noon, and repeated in the evenings. So if you want to hear Craig Folley's last show, you can hear it tonight. It just starts at 6 or 7, goes 2 hours. He is moving on to the big story about him in the Metro Times about his future. I have it here. They do an interview with him. And, of course, because it's Metro Times, he can even express his frustration with words that we can't use over broadcast radio. He just one word there in there, but he, you know. He's going to go into public relations with a company called Detroit Land Bank, or just the Land Bank, which is going to try to encourage people to buy homes and move into Detroit, which is a noble purpose. And somehow, I bet, because public relations is fairly typical, he's going to make probably two, if not three times more money each year than he did at WDET. Some people in the last week who came on his show said, well, good luck to you, Craig. I wish you would run for political office. We'd vote for you because you're so knowledgeable. And of course, when you interview enough people, the big people, frequently enough, you know, you get that kind of background and information. You learn. But he clearly has said he's not interested in politics because after talking to these politicians, it's a heck of a job. You know, it's not the words he used. Certainly not the words he used on air, but it's really tough. He even mentioned today that he's afraid that, you know, because of the kinds of sensational journalism, they're going to dig into his past if he ever tries to run for political office. He says, I don't think I have anything to be ashamed of, you know, skeletons in his closet, if you will. Not that he's in the closet in any way. bad joke there, bad pun. But, you know, that's what he said. But they're going to dig into all my private life, too. Because once you're out there, actually, you know, and we teach these in our WHFR staff training class, they could dig into our lives, Terrence. Anybody could, because we made ourselves public figures here on WHFR. Wow. Now, why they'd want to, how they'd make a buck on it, you know, the Terrence Tyson story on Channel 2 Detroit, you know, hopefully nobody's going to care, no matter what your life was like or my life, you know, the Jay Koronick story. Oh, my God. But, you know, he didn't want that intrusion and probably will never consider that. Still, definitely he was a talk show host to emulate. I can't possibly do, of course, what he did. And many people that I met who listened to the show at Dearborn Homecoming seemed to indicate they were aware of that, too, that I'm not up to any challenge from the people that are better than I am. But I'll miss him. The show will continue with some other hosts for just an hour each morning, repeated at night, and then they're going to fill it with some syndicated shows until they find they're doing a so-called national search for a talk show host. Yeah, but that host, will they know Detroit?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, I think it's got to be somebody from this area or at least spent a lot of years here, as Craig Folley did. He moved away for 3 or 4 years to a public radio station, I think in either North or South Carolina, and then he came back in the last 7 years. He's done this fantastic two-hour-a-day Monday through Friday show. So good luck to you, Craig. He did say today, too, he said, I want to go where I can influence the most people. And I'm thinking, how many people listen every day on the radio? Some people called in this week, Craig, and said, I wouldn't have even voted in this primary election if you hadn't explained it with your guest and so on these issues to me. I mean, over 7 years, how many people has he influenced? He may only have 10 or 20,000 listeners at one point in time on WDET. I bet he has a lot more than that, actually. And all told, there's probably a couple hundred thousand people that listen to him at least once a week because it's such a great show. There's nobody that's doing local news about Detroit and Michigan as well. And as in-depth, you can't just have headline stories for 30 seconds. It has to be the details, too. Mm-hmm. And you got to hear it from the people that are making the news and people that disagree with the news. You got to hear a couple minutes, 10, 15 minutes from these different points of view in order to really learn anything that matters. So I'll miss him. Good luck, Craig. I hope you can now afford to pay for your son's college education. Which you probably couldn't have done if you stayed at WDET. He never said anything about it was the money, but that's got to be a factor, as well as maybe Monday through Friday only hours. It was DET. He would do weekend special events and during the week, and it was all fun, I'm sure, but at a certain point, he'd like to spend some time with his family, I bet, too. Okay, who else is not going to be around in the near future? Bob Ficano. Of course, we'll do our election wrap-up in just a few moments here. I got all the numbers. I'm going to compare the state numbers and the county numbers to Dearborn's numbers. How did Dearborn vote? Were we much different than Wayne County or the state on some of these issues? Kind of, I think that's an interesting point. Always like to see where Dearborn stands in this, too. Chuck Gatica, I believe, because I watched the show last night, it was his last show as a weatherman on WDIV. And I'm thinking, Thursday nights? That's unusual last day. Don't they have weather on Fridays? And it's not the end of the month. You know, it's just the beginning of August now. So there must have been something that he had to leave on August 7th. He will be back. Don't worry, folks. Chuck Gatica will be back, not to do the weather, but to do the Thanksgiving Day parade in downtown Detroit, like WDIV always does. And he's always down on the street, pushing and shoving and talking to people. And he's a great spirit, very positive guy. We had him here at the college for a what we called a share-a-thon for local radio stations, not WDIT, DET, but others came here, high school, college stations from elsewhere in Michigan. And he gave, a great keynote speech for us. He's done many of those from many schools and has visited many schools talking about the weather, too. But he talked about broadcasting in general. Great guy, and wish him well in his next career, which I believe is becoming a local minister of a church.
Wow.
Yeah. And last week from the live show at Dearborn Homecoming, where it was, you know, hot and oh, my goodness. I didn't have access to all the papers as I do now, or the wind was blowing a few around. I thought there was more than just Hussein Berry, who was not going to be running for the school board term coming up in November. There's quite a few candidates, and maybe we'll have a few of the new people on the show in upcoming weeks. Going to try to invite a couple. But beside Hussein Berry, who is the current president of the Board of Education, and also because they have that second job that's folded in, which is being on the Henry Ford College Board of Trustees. They actually have several meetings a month to go to, some for the K-12 system and the others for the HFC, because we're still part, even though we're financially separate entities, the Board of Education also must serve as the Board of Trustees for Henry Ford College. So in addition to Mr. Berry, I said, I knew there's two more people. I couldn't find their names. James Schoolmaster, who has been on the Board of Education, Board of Trustees of HFC for quite a few years. And what a natural to be elected to be on a school board. His last name is Schoolmaster.
How I want.
The master of the schools, you know. And so we wish him well, but he's not going to run again. And Pamela Adams, well, she's served, I think, even more terms than James Schoolmaster on the Board of Ed, and she is not going to be returning either. If we have time, we'll cover some of their stories. I don't think James Schoolmaster either was asked or made any comments about why he's not running, but I know Pamela Adams did. The point is, three incumbents not going to run again in November, but a lot of other choices. Okay, I'd like to sum things up a little bit here about the election, and this is sort of a very good comment from Jack Lessenberry about why voting matters. Thank you, all of you who voted, but we only had about 20% of the registered voters vote, which is what was expected on Tuesday, and that's too bad. But take a listen to Jack Lessenberry's comments. He'll also mention some election results here in this three-minute commentary. And Terrence and I will return on the WHFR Journal for Friday, August the 8th, right after that to give you the actual numbers and maybe more recent numbers. This comment was posted on Wednesday, 2 days ago.
Well, whatever your politics, there's both good news in yesterday's election results, as well as some lessons to be learned. First of all, the good news. It had been widely predicted that turnout yesterday would be an all-time low. Some analysts felt that fewer than 1 million people might vote, which would have been the lowest in modern history. Fewer absentee ballots than expected had been taken out. There are no contests for governor or senator, and on top of that, it rained in much of Metro Detroit. Yet in the end, more than 1.3 million people voted. That's less than one-fifth of those eligible, but it could have been worse. Something else perhaps encouraging is that those who spent the most money didn't always win. Paul Mitchell, a rich businessman from Saginaw County, spent millions in an effort to win the Republican nomination to Congress. He lost to veteran legislator John Moulinar in a landslide. In a similar election in Grand Rapids, another millionaire, Brian Ellis, tried to defeat maverick GOP Congressman Justin Amash. Ellis lost badly, too. On the Democratic side, State Representative Ellen Cogan Lipton spent twice as much as her two primary rivals combined to try to win a state Senate primary, but she ended up finishing third. David Trott, a wealthy Oakland County lawyer who's well-known in the mortgage foreclosure business, did spend millions of his own fortune to successfully win a Republican primary election landslide over incumbent Congressman Kerry Bentivoglio. But Bentivoglio ran essentially no campaign, was unavailable for interviews, and seems to have committed a form of political suicide. Democrats also had a spirited primary there, and Bobby McKenzie, the choice of the party establishment, narrowly became the nominee. He won, although he was vastly outspent by a rival, a physician who had deep pockets but seems to have seldom voted. A third candidate, Nancy Skinner, campaigned almost exclusively by launching nasty attacks on her rivals. She lost badly. The primary also means that Michigan is bound to have another woman and another African-American in Congress. That will probably be Brenda Lawrence, the mayor of Southfield, who won the primary in a safe Democratic district. Republican opponent Christina Conyers is also a black woman. This is both a good and a bad election for the Tea Party. Their candidates lost most of the races in which they challenged traditional incumbents. But three of their noisiest leaders, Todd Corser, Cindy Gamrat, and Gary Glenn, won legislative nominations in safe GOP districts and are sure to be a thorn in Rick Snyder's side if he's reelected. Finally, last night's election proves once again that every vote matters. State Representative Brian Banks has an interesting past, which includes 8 felony convictions. Nevertheless, he managed to win again. In a crowded field, Banks apparently beat Rebecca Thompson, the United Way's respected community engagement director, by 6 votes. Possibly we should think about having runoff elections, as many other states do, in cases where nobody gets even half the vote. That, and move the primary to a time of year when half the state isn't on vacation and just might show up.
So what do you think? Did you vote? Hope you did. You listened to the show. You know how important it is. But, of course, even more important is to understand the outcomes of elections and to plan to work with the people who are elected, of course, to keep them going in the right direction, too. So in that spirit, we'll cover some numbers for you right now, some that I know that Jack has already given you. What matters probably most to the Dearborn area is the Wayne County executive in the Democratic primary. Warren Evans got 46% of the vote. He got 69,000 votes. That's 44% of the votes cast in Wayne County. Second was William Wild with 26% of the votes. And he's the current mayor of Westland. Yes, thank you, Terrence. That's why you're sitting here, Terrence. Just jump right in. Whenever I get tongue-tied. And it's not worthy to mention the other numbers. Bob Ficano got only, the current chief executive, got only 6%. And above him were also Phil Cavanaugh and Kevin McNamara, the other two what I would call name candidates, major names connecting to political families, formerly elected individuals in this area. And that always helps. Of course, Phil Cavanaugh was the only one that was a former Wayne County commissioner. So he knew Wayne County, you might say, from the inside. Then he went on to be a representative to the state of Michigan in Lansing. And he was hoping to come back as a chief executive. He did just a little better than McNamara. Now, what's interesting is to compare some of these numbers, and let's do that right now, in Dearborn. Terrence and I were going over the numbers, and it's quite surprising. Warren Evans didn't win in Dearborn. And I don't know how many votes. Let me just flip back to page 1. Terrence is looking at this, but In Dearborn, we had only, it's only about 11,000 votes cast out of 61,000 registered voters.
Wow.
In Dearborn, we only had almost, not quite 11,000 votes cast. So that's only 17%, 17.54% turnout, which is worse than the state of Michigan, which is worse than Wayne County, I think. Was it raining on Tuesday?
Yeah, it did toward the latter end.
It might cut off a percent or two. But there was, you know, this is very significant. I mean, Wayne County is a big government with a big budget, and it's got big problems, near bankruptcy, if somebody doesn't keep it on the straight and narrow. And, you know, the jail that isn't built and may just be left unbuilt. That's still to be decided, I think. So that was a major race. But out of our 11,000, and who knows how different Dearborn is, I'm not going to go into the demographics, because I don't know the demographics of the 11,000 out of the 61,000 that are registered. I mean, what kinds of people are those? We know they voted. Okay. So the numbers in Dearborn are interesting because in terms of the percentages, go ahead, Terrence, I give the sheet back to you now. You get the honor here. What percent of the votes did Warren Evans get? He got 44% in the county, and in Dearborn.
Yeah, he only got about approximately 25% of the vote.
That's
in
right.
Dearborn.
All, yeah, it's not quite half, but I mean a little bit over half, but still. And so who won in Dearborn?
Actually, it was William Wild.
That's right. And he got what percentage?
Second. He got almost 41% of the vote.
Right. So it's like switched around, is that William Wild got 40-plus percent. Now, what surprised me, and I might have mentioned this on my show last week, I discovered that he had his county campaign headquarters in East Dearborn on Chase Road, just north of Michigan Avenue, a big facility, a lot of signs, and of course his campaign, I got a lot of mailings. Did you get any Wild mailings at your house, Terrence?
No, I didn't.
Hmm. Okay.
I didn't.
Because I don't, you can't send these mailings everywhere, of course, because there's too many people and they cost too much for these large size postcards, glossy paper, you know, fancy. I got at least two from Wild. And then we're looking here at last Sunday's press and guide. This is the Sunday before the Tuesday election. And I realized only this morning that, I wasn't following these political ads too much. I'd voted 2 weeks ago. And I said on the show last Friday, as I said 3 or 4 weeks before, the only problem with voting absentee and voting early is that you may not have all the information. You may get more information later after you voted and realize you voted in a way you didn't want to vote. You would have preferred to vote a different way. So that is kind of true, folks. If you don't wait until the day of the election, there might be some information you will discover that would actually change the way you're going to vote, the candidate you're going to vote for, or how you're going to vote on the proposal. And that happened with me. I have at least one, if not two, times that I voted in ways that if I would have waited till Tuesday, I would have voted differently. I feel badly about that. I really do. So I didn't read any of these ads, but oh my gosh, William Wild, last Sunday, if you still got last Sunday's press and guide, it's got a two-page ad. When has a politician taken out a two-page ad? Usually it's like a quarter page or an eighth of a page. These things cost money. They really do. Thousands of dollars, I bet, for a two-page ad. And it is from William Wild. And one-fourth of the two pages is his plan for the future of Wayne County. But, oh my gosh, another fourth is the Warren Evans has a past of failure and mismanagement. Now, he's the elected person, and because Wayne County is so Democratic, registered Democrats and so on, the odds are he's going to win in November against the Republican. And you just, you know, compare the Republican candidate's background. I don't know what it is, but you take a look at it, you decide. By the way, folks, there's going to be more than just Democrats and Republicans. As I remind you, in November, there's going to be people from other political parties. You say, why haven't they been running? Because the Democrats and Republicans in the state of Michigan won't allow them to be in the primaries. That's right. They won't allow them. Because if they even get in there, you might start finding out stuff about them. You might even vote for them early. And that's extra publicity for them. And the Dems and Republicans not wanting to take any chances, they don't want anybody else to be getting the word out. And so that's totally unfair. But of course, there's a big case to make about why we don't even need primaries. I think if you're a part of a political party, let your party members decide. Who would know better that would represent your party at this time, moment in time, better than the people who are in the party? I mean, who is the best Democrat? Who is the best Republican? Who should know that best? Well, the people should decide. Well, the people will decide once the candidates go into the general election. I think it's a total waste of money. All these primaries are extra publicity for Democrats and Republicans. And you never know, never realize until maybe the last minute in November that you've got other choices. People who have qualified for the ballot and you could vote for them and they could win if they get enough votes. The other two major parties that I know of that will be there in November are the Libertarian Party, the third largest party in the United States, and the Green Party of the United States. I'm not recommending either one of them, but I'm saying they're there, okay? And but listen, now, Jack Lessenberry has pointed this out in commentaries in the past, too, about Warren Evans. Warren Evans was appointed by his longtime friend Bob Ficano as a highly paid consultant for the failed Wayne County Jail project that cost Wayne County taxpayers $300 million, a bill that still has to be paid. Evans was Bob Ficano's appointed undersheriff while Ficano was sheriff, acted as his consultant, quote-unquote, and was a highly paid Ficano appointee. He has offered no plan to reduce the deficit that the county is facing. Of course, he's going to have to offer something if he gets elected. And this always seems strange, but I think it's fair. He's at an age where he's already collecting a pension from the Wayne County Sheriff's Department. Okay? And he did so while he made $128,000 a year as sheriff. So apparently he's getting a pension for being undersheriff. And he's now sheriff. So he's getting paid close to $200,000 a year right now. And so, of course, he won't be sheriff, but he's going to get Wayne County executive annual pay, if elected, of an additional $172,000. He's got a nice home in Washtenaw County. Doesn't live in Wayne County, of course. And he's got a horse farm in Anderson County, South Carolina. Now, everybody should have a horse farm in South Carolina. I'm not against that. And yes, Wayne County has a lot of nice homes and a little more open space than Detroit. I'm not saying anything about that. He's worked hard for many years, whether or not you agree with the work he's done, that's not the issue here for me anyway. By the way, his candidacy for election is still being challenged in court as he didn't change his residency from Wayne County Township to Detroit until the day before the filing deadline. But of course, that was the day before. Good enough, right? I suspect that now that'll just be tossed out of court if it's still in court. But anyway, by the way, while he was sheriff, ongoing here in Wayne County, his department was consistently over budget. Now, all these are points brought up by Bill Wild in his campaign statements. It's interesting that this two-page ad was paid for, not by William Wild, and not endorsed by him, paid for by conservative citizens to save Wayne County, preserving conservative values. Who the heck is that? But they got some money here. Are they business people? Is Wild a Republican? No, he's running as a Democrat. So who are these conservative citizens to save Wayne County, preserving conservative values? Very unusual, because they paid a fortune here to put this in. So blame them if these facts are wrong in any way. I just know several of them, and I don't know which ones exactly, that Jack Lessenberry has said true. Public safety, Evans first resigned from his appointed position as undersheriff. Then he abruptly resigned as Wayne County sheriff. He was asked by the mayor to resign as Detroit police chief when his sexual relationship with a young female officer was revealed. His direct involvement in a TV reality show featuring the Detroit SWAT team resulted in the death of an innocent 7-year-old girl. While he was sheriff, he owned a bar in Detroit and was paid $16,000 and was $16,000 in arrears on property taxes. I bet he paid those by now. But when he was undersheriff of Wayne County, he and his brother had the no-bid phone contract with Ameritech at the county jail. Every time a prisoner made a $3 phone call, they collected a 15% fee, which totaled about $315,000 a year. And we already talked about his connection with the failed Wayne County jail, which you know, they may decide to throw more money at it now that he's going to be executive. But I'll tell you, from what I've read, they're on the edge of financial management in Wayne County. So if they don't straighten things out quick and maybe stop building that jail, because I don't think we can afford it, well, anyway. So those are some of the bad news issues brought up by this committee that did this two-page ad for Bill Wilde. He didn't endorse it. It says not approved or authorized by any candidate. So, of course, if it says something like that, folks, even for a TV ad, you shouldn't believe any of it. But I happen to know some of these things are true. They were reported in the press. Now, how completely true they are, I can't say. But I am repeating them because, Warren Evans, you probably got the job, and good luck, but also make some good decisions here. Because if you don't, Wayne County will be taken over by the state of Michigan. I think it'll be the first county to be taken over by a financial manager in the state of Michigan. But they're in deep trouble if they, because I talked to Gary Warnchuk about this off the record, if they don't get their act together here. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully he's got good support. He has support from Mayor Duggan. He has support from Kim Worthy, the prosecuting attorney in Wayne County. I think that helped him tremendously in his campaign, as well as name recognition. A lot of people hadn't heard Bill Wilde's name in this Detroit area before. And Terrence, you say you live in Detroit?
No, I'm in Inkster.
Oh, but Inkster. And you didn't get anything from Wilde. Maybe he thought you knew of him because Inkster is not that far from Westland.
Yeah. A
couple miles over. I don't know.
Interesting.
They all have their plans here. But Dearborn support, and it's not just because he had that big campaign headquarters. It wasn't on Michigan Avenue. It was north on this street called Chase. And but it was huge. And I know we had people come to my door, not Wild, but so there was a door knocking. So the campaign was huge in Dearborn, and it certainly got the people out here. But it didn't make the difference for him, of course. Okay, looking at these other numbers. Okay, I think people are most concerned about the three propositions you should have heard on television, although guess what? I don't think they covered it enough. I don't think people... I guess I was watching the wrong TV shows because I wasn't tuned in constantly every minute. I heard nothing about the results on a Tuesday night on any of the major channels in Detroit. And maybe Wednesday morning there was stuff. But in Dearborn Press and Guide, even on their website, they didn't have a story today, which means they probably won't have a story unless they're writing it as I speak now for their Sunday edition. They have to have something about the election in the Sunday edition. I know that their Wednesday edition was too close to the election, but still, I'd like to have some numbers here, although we're sharing them from other sources, mainly Wayne County numbers and state numbers, too. Okay, so let's go to the proposals. If you haven't heard, proposal number one, proposition one, about the personal property tax, which is complete misnomer. It's a business tax paid not on their property, but the stuff on their property, the stuff that's not locked down. The furniture, the computers, the grinding machines, like the TV ad showed. And so no more tax on that. That's going to save small and big businesses. I think I heard that Ford Motor Company is going to save $7 million a year alone by having that repealed. But every business, you know, who was in favor of Proposition 1? Anybody that knew about it, who was a business person, they wanted it to pass. You can understand that.
Right.
It saves them a bundle. Okay. And will they pass those savings along to the rest of us? I'm waiting.
Yeah.
I'm waiting to see. Okay. Did Right to Work save us any money? Not that I know of. Did prices go down in businesses in Michigan? No. When Governor Snyder got into office, and all of a sudden he changed the business tax from about 6 3/4 almost, and a crazy, it was a crazy way to try to compute the business tax for businesses. It was hard to explain even to the business people, but it was about 6 3/4 for most, and it was reduced to sort of a flat 6%. So they saved, many businesses saved a lot of money. That 0.75% was a lot of money on their profits. And have any of them lowered their prices? Has Ford Motor Company lowered the prices on their new cars? I don't think so. So, I can only believe they're making more profits, all these businesses. And what are they doing with the profits? I think they're keeping them for themselves. Now, because there's no money on new computers and so on, they say that this will allow the businesses to do more investment in computers and stuff in their buildings because they won't have to pay any extra tax on it. You know, so if it's brand new, not depreciated, they don't have to pay any tax on it, whereas they would have to pay tax on the full new value in the old so-called personal property tax situation. So it should allow them the freedom and the incentive, in a way, to buy new stuff for their businesses, in their businesses. Will it, or will they just take the money and use it for their own personal pleasure in some way? Will they increase the pay of their workers? Don't count on that either, folks. So I'm waiting for it. Will it increase when the word on this gets out to other businesses outside of Michigan? Will it increase businesses coming into Michigan? Well, so far, right to work and the lower business tax and the simplified business tax hasn't worked. So will the lack of a personal property tax help? Well, again, we're 2 years, 3 years down the road. Maybe nobody heard about this yet anywhere in the United States. What a great new climate for business it is. But actually, if you look at it, we're down at least a third of the way in terms of the 50 states, in terms of business taxes, even with these changes. We were only about a third of the way down. I think we're about a fourth of the way down. We were only about a third of the way down in business tax. In other words, not the highest at all. So we're better for business in terms of taxes now than we were a couple of years ago, but not that much better. So I don't think we're seeing any differences, and I bet we won't see any difference even though it did pass. And it passed by a lot, 140,000 to 71,000, whatever that is, 70% almost, I think. So either people understood it or a lot of business people went and voted for it. And the city of Dearborn, about the same percent on property tax, Proposition 1.
Say Prop 1, yeah.
What the
66?
Yeah,
to
66. 33. We got 70% statewide. So yeah. Now the smart bus renewal, and I think that's only in this. That's not state. It's just Wayne County, or is it Tri County?
It was Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb.
Okay.
Yep.
So 52,000 people said yes. That's 63% for these. Tri-County area, and 30,000 said no. So in Dearborn, what percent said yes?
Yeah, it's about 65 to 36.
Right. I think a lot of people in Dearborn use the smart buses. I see them all over here. So
I personally voted for it myself.
Yeah, I think it's because since we don't have a good regional bus system, and of course the smart buses don't go everywhere in Detroit. It's mainly for the outlying suburbs, but it's something for the people that need this transport because the Detroit system doesn't extend into the suburbs, really. So, which is a big problem for me. I mean, I've been to cities. I talk about this frequently. I've only been to a couple cities, but Austin, Texas, their bus system goes, I swear, 40, 50 miles every direction, almost every street, main street, not residential street, every intersection, there's bus pickups. And 2 years ago when I was there, it was $1.25 for a ticket for a whole day. Wow. On or off, back and forth for a whole day. And, of course, it was cheaper if you buy by the month. I think it was $30 to go anywhere you want to for a monthly bus ticket. What's it in Detroit, $175 or $150 one way or something?
I'm not sure.
I should ask Steve Homer, who one of our staff volunteers who comes in from Hamtramck on the buses each week, and he's got some big stories to tell. It takes him like an hour and a half. He has to change buses three times from Hamtramck.
Wow.
I think it's just one ticket, but, you know, still, it's unbelievable. And, of course, they don't run on schedule, and they don't run frequently, and, yeah. So, good for the smart buses. I think that was worthwhile. And that actually adds up in Dearborn, I think, for about, I figured it out in terms of the millage increase, about a 60, well, it depends on the value of your home, but about $60 a year increase to support the smart buses. And I'm not sure anybody understood that, at least in Dearborn, but it did pass in Dearborn by about the same percentage. But Proposition 3 failed, and that was to help the local schools to get their funding back up to where they were before Engler took off. Engler, invidious comparison, before Snyder took office. because despite what he said, he has not. He cut the school budget so much when he came in. Okay, we had a little crisis in funding in the state. I understand that. And it still hasn't built back up to where it was. So this was a stopgap temporary measure that was legal, totally legal, for Wayne County to ask for the money to its intermediate school district, which it promised and legally was bound to turn the money back to all the local districts, depending on the percent of the population. But it failed. It failed in the big vote. 101,000 people said no. 98,000 said yes, though. So it was 51-49. Boy, was that close. And don't tell me it doesn't matter to vote, folks. This was so close. If you wanted the schools to have the funding they had before Snyder took office, then this was the way to reestablish it just for 6 years. What was the percent of loss? And lost in Dearborn, too. But
50 to 49%, 57 votes.
Yeah, it's only 57 votes different. Not that Dearborn would make the difference, but that's, it pays to vote. As I told people last week, your vote means so much more because so many people aren't voting, okay? And it shouldn't, of course. I mean, you're just one vote. But what I'm saying is the outcome of these elections depends on just a few votes, not thousands. Of course, every vote counts, or at least should be counted, in the best possible systems. But they actually mean more to decide issues when there's so many fewer voting. So it failed, but it was so close. I think a lot of people did want to get the money back up for the schools. And it was actually less money per household than the smart money. It's something like $30 a household for reestablishing the school fund. Okay. Throughout the area, there was a lot of individual cities, and I can't go over all of them, that had school millage requests and had asked for continued funding of this or that in for the cities. They all passed except for Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park said, we need an override of the Headley Amendment, which is, people have been fighting this for years and years and years, which it limits the amount of funding that local areas can get. And when property values go down, you're really messed up. I could use other words that wouldn't be acceptable in WHFR. But you have no choice. So in Dearborn, we did pass a Headley override a couple of years ago. Again, not to give the city more money from the people, but to try to give them a little more funding. The people already got a real break on taxes because, you know, the millage was worth less when the property values went down. So, but this Headley override, and I looked it up in the paper. There was a story last week about Lincoln Park. This Headley override and millage increase, therefore, it would only be $20 more per average household in Lincoln Park. And it would have meant, though, $250,000 for the city. Because Lincoln Park is close to the edge of financial management, too. Or are they already there? Are there? There was an agreement. Anyway, they really needed the extra money, and it was so small an amount. And yet, everywhere else, all these extra or renewal millages passed. But this extra little amount in Lincoln Park, the people in Lincoln Park said no. Now, I think also there was a school millage in Lincoln Park. It was a renewal. It passed. But for the city, it didn't pass. And how close was that? 1,658 votes said no. 1,399, so less than 1,700 to 1,400. So a difference of only about 300 votes, and the city of Lincoln Park is in trouble now. They don't have enough money. And it's because the property values went down and people didn't want to give the money back. But it was so small an amount that the smart proposal cost people $60 on average, at least average home in Dearborn. And the school would have been, the school support would have been $30. And this Lincoln Park Headley override would have only meant to them about $20 more per average household in Lincoln Park. And they voted it down. I don't understand. Unless their city council and or their mayor has some sort of bad image. Like, are they known as all incompetent or corrupt in some way? Then the voters are not as likely to support something if they don't trust the elected officials. And I'm not saying that's true. I know nothing about the backgrounds of any of those people, but I'm just saying, why would they vote down such a small increase and approve, well, the schools were just a renewal, but why wouldn't they vote to help their city and avoid the financial management? big question there, but I don't know. Maybe we'll see an answer sometime in the future. If a full-time reporter ever does a story on what's really happening in Lincoln Park, and I challenge the Press and Guide or Times Herald to send somebody down there and find out. Because we just got Terrence and myself here, and we got other stuff to do.
Right.
Terrence is fully employed, right, with
yep.
the City of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So good for you, as long as that lasts.
Yeah, keeping my fingers
right.
crossed.
Yeah. Keep saving up your pennies for retirement, because
exactly.
the pension is not going to be as much as you thought.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, statewide, just a little reflection. I know we've taken like 20 minutes now of this hour, but of course, there was more activity because of the Wayne County race for executive in the Democratic side. So more people, including Republicans, might have just chosen to vote in the Democratic primary in order to get a name there, because which is the most Republican of all of those Wayne County Democrats? It might have enticed a Republican to come in and vote for someone. There's no law against that, which is another problem of our kind of primary system. And you say, well, it should just be you have to register to be a Democrat, and then you're stuck being a Democrat in every one of these primaries. I don't like that. I think I should have the right to choose. But
I agree.
But when you start messing up, when you get Republican votes in the Democratic side or Democratic votes in the Republican side, you're actually voting against the Republican or the Democratic causes, I guess, because your philosophy is a little bit different. So that's why I'm not in favor of primaries either, because they're either closed, which I think is unfair to the person who wants to be an independent. Although they tell me if they have a closed primary and you identify yourself as an independent, you could still choose to vote Democrat or Republican. How do you like that one? So well, I just say I was an independent no matter what I was, because that would still give me that same choice as the open primary. So primaries are all messed up. Okay. But here are the numbers. Okay. Snyder got only 49,000 votes statewide, and it was a statewide vote here on governor. Of course, he was uncontested, just like Mark Schauer, who we interviewed at Dearborn Homecoming. He did come to Dearborn, and we had a nice 10-minute interview with him, and I may pull that out and rerun that for you next week. Nice guy. I mean, I'm not supporting him on the show anyway, but how many politicians can you talk to and they sound like they're full of themselves? He seems like a real person, a nice person, and a knowledgeable person too. Hope that's the image that can get out in his campaign. But he got 140,000. So as I said, it was primarily activity in the Democratic primary, so that's why you're going to get more people, especially in Wayne County, voting as a Democrat, whether they are or not, and it would attract more Democrats to come and vote. But the polls say right now, all the statewide polls, no matter whether you're conservative or liberal polling organization, and you shouldn't be, it's neck and neck. Snyder and Schauer have about the same support, which it shouldn't really be that way for an incumbent governor. But of course, Schauer is campaigning on the mistakes or the problems caused by the Snyder and the Republican administration, as well he should, as you would expect. And I mentioned in my interview, I'm still pretty personally upset that my pension, after I was retired, was cut by Snyder and the legislature as a retired teacher. Yes, I got a part-time job here, but, pensions aren't enough, right? Social Security's not enough, really, when you think about it. But they cut my pension after I was already retired. And even for the people a couple days away from retiring, they cut them even more. And I would think they if you're going to be fair, if you got a cut, you got a guarantee. Isn't it part of our Michigan Constitution? Yes, it is, but nobody's following that. Nobody's following the constitutional provision that says all pensions must be honored once they're given out. Okay. Well, if you don't have the money, what you going to do? I'm sorry, it's in the Michigan Constitution. Okay. But to me, also, if they got a cut, they cut the people that are not retired yet. But at least not, maybe 3 years to go or 5 years to go, because you got a plan to not have as much money.
Exactly.
It's going to take a few years to find a second job or to save up more or whatever, or move out of the state because the taxes are higher than other states once you're retired. So I think if they were totally fair, they shouldn't cut for people who already retired. And okay, I know that If you're already retired for five or more years as a teacher, when this happened, they didn't cut you. But I was one of those people that had only just been retired. And so in the first 5 years, those people, yes, let's cut them. Well, what's the logic there? You know. And then a bigger cut for people who hadn't retired yet as teachers in Michigan. And maybe all government officials, I think it's just the teachers' pension fund that was involved this time, but maybe all government retirees were cut. I'm sorry if that's the case for them too. But you shouldn't do that. And I thought it was in our state constitution. Who isn't, you know, adjudicating that? Where's our Republican appointed, basically a Republican elected Supreme Court? Don't they read the letter of the law? I think it's pretty clear, but they don't care because the Republican governor and legislature says, oh, we want to cut their pay anyway. And so if it was brought up to the Michigan Supreme Court, you know how, and it's never been brought up. Interesting. The Republican Attorney General of the state of Michigan, Schulte, he didn't bring it up to ask for review by the Supreme Court. Is this fair to do? You know, even in Detroit, of course, what happened there? Because they were in emergency financial management. They weren't bankrupt legally. They weren't bankrupt, but they were emergency financial management. A federal judge said, yeah, you can cut the pensions because they're kind of like bankrupt. Well, thank you, federal judge. You're not respecting Michigan state law. Which should come first here? You know, and nobody ever challenged that. And I, you know, I don't know why the Democrats didn't, other than the fact if they take it to the Michigan Supreme Court, which is all Republican elected people, they're, as it's happened in the last dozen years, they're going to support whatever the Republican position is, mm-hmm. because they owe their election and re-election, they're not appointed for life in the Michigan Supreme Court, to the support of the Republican Party. Of course, they probably agree with the Republican issues and ideals, or the Republicans wouldn't have chosen them to give them money to get elected in the first place. But as jurists, legal people, okay, there's no doubt about the Michigan Constitution. It clearly says you don't cut pensions once they're awarded. Oh, my God. Okay. Anyway, just because it's personal, sorry, I rant on here too much. And the same thing with Peters and for Senator Gary Peters versus Land. Is it Mary Lynn Land?
Terry
Lynn Land. Yes, yeah. Thank you. I guess you know who I follow. It also, not quite as much, but fewer people voted, but the same percentage of Peters over Land, almost 3-1. We'll see what happens, of course, in November. That'll be a great election. Also in local elections in this district, well, it's a big district. It goes crazy to Ann Arbor and downriver. But Debbie Dingell did win the Democratic primary against Terry Bowman. Didn't know anything about Terry. She got almost a little over 26,000. He got just a little over 14,000 votes. So she didn't trounce him, but it's 2-1. And so she's going to be the Democratic candidate for that district, which is gerrymandered to theoretically be a Republican district in terms of registered voters. But John Dingell always won. And, of course, I know politics, the way it runs, and the way people vote. I know I've taken political science classes. I know the studies. I bet a lot of people voted for Debbie Dingell because they thought it was John Dingell. I mean, they just saw the name Dingell, and they voted. I'm just sorry. I'm not no disservice there, but I just... But anyway, she got those votes, and she's the candidate. I've met her and talked to her several times, and she's very smart. She's been involved. Oh, this will be her first elected office, I think, but she's been appointed to many different commissions and boards. And, of course, she's been in the Dingell household for quite a while now with John Dingell in Washington, so she knows Washington, D.C. pretty well and the players down there. We'll see who the Republican is. We might have the Republican or the Green Party candidate or the Libertarian candidate or all of them on this show, because we want to give you all the choices you can. 11th district is wild and crazy. And Terrence, again, you're in this district, aren't you?
The 11th district?
No.
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Well, that's where Julie Plawecki won. And you said you voted for a WHFR staff member.
Yeah, Ned. Ned of PGN.
Yes. Yeah. Ned is not only one of our staff members here at WHFR and had a Dearborn Heights talk show until he decided to run for political office briefly here, as it turns out. He did not win. But Julie Plawecki, and that's a big name, wife of David Plawecki, who had a big career in Dearborn Heights and is a representative of the state of Michigan. And so she has won. Again, the name Plawecki means a lot, even though that district goes all the way to Garden City and is a crazy gerrymandered district. It's not a contiguous area, as they say. But she won there, and I don't know what the percentage was, but it's not in Dearborn. Also, if you're interested, we see him around a lot. I think he was formerly a U of M Dearborn student and then a veteran of the Iraq War, David Kanizek. He switched from, after only not even completing one term, he was a representative to the state of Michigan from the Dearborn Heights area. He switched to running as a senator from the 5th District, which again is gerrymandered and I don't know where it goes, but he did win that handily, even though there's a little dispute about the Dearborn Heights clerk's office that's involved in that, and there's still some absentee ballots that haven't been counted. And apparently still some requests for absentee ballots, which were never sent out. Wow. Ballots were not sent out. Why? Well, it's a big story here. It's still being investigated. I think it's the last story we're going to do. Joanne Korchinska will begin for Highway 61 Blues in just a few moments. It's WHFR Dearborn you're listening to. This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Kornick and Terrence Tyson sitting in with you today. Here's the story as I understand it, and I'm just going to summarize it because we only have a couple minutes. A lot of ballots, absentee ballot request forms, were brought to the Dearborn Heights City Clerk office. The city clerk, Walter Prusiewicz, was not there at the time. So whoever was there accepted the mail of all of these ballots. So technically, they accepted the applications because they took the mail. However, on inspection, these applications weren't signed. So they had the addresses of the people that wanted absentee ballots sent to them. So they were filled out, but they weren't signed. That they have to be signed, supposedly by the real person, too. And so Prusiewicz didn't know what to do. He called state election officials, and they finally told him, you don't have to send out those statements because they're not signed. Well, some of the people were of Arab American or American Arab descent, and their anti-discrimination committees, a number of groups, in fact, have come together saying, this is unfair, and you're discriminating against Arab Americans, or American Arabs, and maybe even others. I still don't see the evidence. And finally, there was a ruling this week, I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, by a court judge that said there's no... let me grab the paper. Yep, here it is from the Wednesday Press and Guide. I want to get this right. I know the podcast is going to cut off. Michigan Bureau of Elections says Dearborn Heights City Clerk followed procedures properly. Okay? But at this point,